Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Well, you know, when SPC's down, we're still never out. That has always been the case. Now, there's been a number of times in the last few weeks where I had, as Remzo likes to say, Florida man stuff going on. And I did. And Remzo valiantly filled in for me, doing a solo episode by himself. But in this case, look, I just don't like to do podcasts alone. That's just my personal philosophy. I don't really prefer it because I feel like a crazy person just talking to a camera for an hour and it feels awkward. So I like to have somebody else there with me. So for that reason, I called upon my good friend here, Mr. Eric, one of our, I believe you were our very first patron, actually.
And one of the first.
Yes, one of the first, you know, who cares? And but you are the first person to get me into comic books. That is a historical fact that cannot be changed. So welcome back to SBC.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
I'd say it's my pleasure, and I will say it because it is my pleasure. But what's not my pleasure is knowing that Remzo is a little bit laid up. Now, I don't want to reveal any personal details here, but let's just say Remzo is in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. No, that's not true. That's probably not true. He had a little ankle sprain of some kind. As you guys know, he's been in some training. A number of our SPC members did donate to the cause, and you know. Sometimes when you're training for a cause, you push things a little too hard. So hopefully Remzo is just sitting back right now, popping painkillers and healing up. And if you want to contribute to the Heal Remzo Martinez and help him continue to learn to read fund, you can do so over on our Patreon at patreon.com/secondprintpod. Now, we are still going to talk about the issue that we were originally going to discuss here today as we mapped out our schedule weeks ago. That is Saga of the Swamp Thing number 28, way back from the good old run with Alan Moore from the 80s. Now, this is a run that Remzo and I talked about very early on in the podcast where we went through that first graphic novel covering the first two arcs where Alan Moore basically redid the origin of Swamp Thing, or retconned it, you might say. And to me, this is one of the greatest comic runs of all time. But Eric, talking to you before the show, I found it something that shocked me. And you've never actually read this run. Is that right?
I have never read this run.
How did that happen? You've introduced me to half the comics I've read. So how did this even happen?
I don't know. It kind of fits all the genres that I like. So I'm not sure how I missed this. I think the only book that I've read in this entire run is probably the first appearance of Constantine. And I think that's probably the only book I've read in this entire Saga of the Swamp Thing.
As a John Constantine completist, as you like to tout about yourself,
yeah,
as a man around town. Well, yeah, this really does check all your boxes because you've sent us down a couple different sort of horror avenues. I know you're really all about the art a lot of the times. And one of my favorite parts about this run, I mean, everyone talks about it as the Alan Moore run because it is, but Stephen Bissett's art in this run goes so perfectly with Alan Moore that I don't think you can credit one without crediting the other for creating this complete package here. So I assume, since you were one of our very first patrons, that you did back in the day hear our foray into Swamp Thing, our whole breakdown of the new origin and all that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I'm going to do a quick recap, but before I do, if you're wondering why I'm so spry, by the way, new studio, by the way, I'm not even fully set up. I just got a bookshelf behind me that I'm starting to slowly populate as I unpack. But as you can see, Eric, this is directly from here. You can see some glimpses of the rogues
that you sent
to us. So slowly populating. Got a little ISOM back there for my man, Eric July. And I'm trying to populate it with some cool things, but most of those things are still in boxes. So we'll see. This will unfold. Things will unfold as they go, as we do here on SBC. But before I even get into this issue, you know what I got here? It's a coffee cup. Coffee cup that is almost empty because I just finished my third cup. I might have a problem. My third cup of Fox & Sons coffee. I am still digging into my 2-pound bag of the Den Blend Dark. I am a dark roast man. But I've also tried, I've dipped into the foray of some other, he adds the Brazilian, I want to say the Brazilian pea berry, the Tasmanian pea berry. I get them all confused. There's lots of different countries. There's lots of different pea berries. There's lots of different berries, lots of different beans. You got to check them all out. So what I want you to do is head over to our great sponsors, Fox & Sons, foxandsons.com, FOXNSONS.com. I don't want you to just go there and spend full price. You never tried this coffee, but I get it. That's why I got you the second print discount, 15% off if you use discount code SECONDPRINTPOD. Choose a couple bags. Any order over $25 will get you not only that free shipping, but also that 15% off your order. Once you try a couple of beans, you're going to be hooked like me, and you're going to want a subscription. And because you're special, because you're SBC listeners, Stephen Fox is also going to give you $4 off your monthly subscription for these 2-pound bags. That is what fuels me. Without this coffee, I don't know if we'd be here right now. I don't know if I would even make it to noon if I wasn't sucking down the Fox & Sons coffees every single day. So do check out our great sponsors, Fox & Sons at foxandsons.com. Don't forget discount code. I almost said the discount code for my other show because I have another one. But for this show, it's use discount code SECONDPRINTPOD. Now I will take a sip and then we shall proceed. Now, before we proceed, actually, Eric, you had a little comic-filled weekend yourself visiting the con everyone's been talking about, not exactly, but it's a con you've been talking about, and that is, what is it called, Terrific Con?
It's called Terrific Con.
So is that all based around fans of the character Mr. Terrific?
No, it has nothing to do with Mr. Terrific.
That's the convention I want to go to. I want to go to the Mr. Terrific Con, where everyone is dressed as Mr. Terrific, and then I get in trouble for blackface. And I'm like, come on, I was just doing the character.
It's actually one of the biggest conferences, comic book conferences in Connecticut. And it's all comic book based. So if you're looking for a conference that has comic book vendors on top of comic book vendors on top of comic book vendors, this is probably the right conference for you.
So it's less the flash and the pizzazz and the speaking and the talking and the this and that. It's just here's the comics, which is really cons used to be for me. I mean, when I was a kid, it was just the comics.
Exactly right. They have the Artist Alley like every other conference. Yeah. And they had a pretty impressive lineup this year. You know, they had Chris Claremont, they had Arthur Adams, you know, and then they had like Tom King, which I know you and Remzo love. You know, they had his buddy Mitch Gerards there. And then they had
like Mitch Gerards. I have nothing.
Yeah, Mitch Gerards is pretty good. And they probably had like 50 others. So there was quite a number of artists you could go and kind of take a look at what books they're producing, get their signatures, meet and greet. And a lot of them were really nice, really great creators. You know, I spent quite a bit of time with them. Some of them were really generous with their time, especially towards the end of the day, you know, when there were fewer people on the floor. And then on the floor itself, you know, it was just long boxes. But the vendors, there was probably one or two booths dedicated to, you know, those pop figurines. You know, if you go to some of the bigger conferences like San Diego Comic-Con or New York Comic-Con, you know, those have kind of turned into more of the pop conferences where there's more, you know, I'm talking pop culture in that case, you know, where there's more, you know, trading cards or, you know, pop figurines or anime type stuff. And this was really comic book based. You know, I was able to look through the boxes, look through the collections, and I was able to pick up some pretty cool stuff.
What's you had a big prize you got this weekend. What's the big one?
Yeah, my big splurge.
Sorry, you don't have it on you, but
I don't have it on me, but it's on the fan zone. If anyone wants to sign up and take a look, pictures there. I picked up Amazing Spider-Man 238, which is the first appearance of Hobgoblin. It's something that I've been looking after for a while, and for a purchase like that, I want to see it in person so I can make sure there's no spine ticks and make sure that it is complete. Because in that particular book, there's a tattoo insert.
A tattoo insert.
And oftentimes that tattoo insert is removed. So I wanted to make sure that it was there and that both pieces were there to make sure that it is complete.
So I'm curious then. I never
fixed my glasses here.
I've never really thought about this aspect of it, but I got to imagine that goes into the concept of grading something. If a book is perfect but has some trading card or tattoo missing, that's technically like not a full book. I would think. How does that work with grading?
I'm not sure. It's the first book that I've really gotten where it would have that kind of qualifier, you know, where there's something that is supposed to be there, but it would be removed. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that would get a qualified grade from someone like CGC or another vendor. I haven't really looked into that too much, but I wanted the complete package. It is going in for grading because I want it to be preserved and I want it to be a display piece.
Maybe this is how we find out. You can be like, so what would you grade this if it was exactly the same but didn't have the tattoo?
Exactly right. So you've been to my house. You know, I have a little display wall of my comics, and this will be going right up, right next to the first appearance of Demo Goblin.
Nice. It's the goblin section of the wall.
I'll work my way back to, you know, maybe I win the lottery at some point.
You get a green goblin. You can do a Harry. Then you can do all the green goblins.
Exactly right.
I'm kind of curious if you think that I don't really know how this stuff works with the ebbs and flows, but like, let's say, because there's, you know, there's the character of Ned Leeds already exists in the sort of MCU Spider-Verse, and they've made some hints that maybe that character could become Hobgoblin. But other than that, we've never seen it actually Hobgoblin on screen. I don't believe, maybe in some animated like Spider-Man bullshit that Remzo likes, but nothing that I've ever seen. So do you think that if, like, let's say in the Tom Holland Spider-Man 4, they turn Ned Leeds into the Hobgoblin. Does something like that maybe increase the value of this book?
Yeah. So what I've seen with comic books and collectibles is if there's a storyline that's coming up in movies, that generally increases the value of the book for a time. Right. So when Moon Knight came out, the value of Moon Knight number one and the value of the first appearance of Moon Knight went through the roof. You know, it doubled, tripled in price in some cases, and then it crashed back down to earth. So, you know, it becomes hot for a time, it becomes collectible for a time, and then it comes right back down to the original value, you know, that the collectors like you and me value that at. You know, there's a speculation market, and then there's the actual value of the book that, you know, collectors see it as. So I'm collecting this because I want the book, right. Not because I'm looking to speculate on it or
It all depends on what your motives are and why you're collecting and what your time horizon is. If you're just trying to make a buck on a book and you happen to have, let's say, bought that first appearance of Moon Knight 5 years ago, then you probably should have sold it 6 months ago or something. Exactly. But if you actually bought it because you want the book and you want to have that in your collection, then, well, maybe you're never going to sell it. You know, you're going to ride this thing to the grave.
Yeah, and there's another book that I was looking for at this conference that I passed on because it was just a ludicrous amount of money. It's Something is Killing Children number 5. I've mentioned it to you. It's something that I've been looking for a while now. It's the one issue that I don't have in the collection, and they wanted $250 for it. Wow. And I was like, absolutely not.
That's
and it
crazy.
Had spine ticks on it. I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not paying that.
It's crazy for a comic that's relatively new. So why that issue in particular? I mean, the series took off and has become kind of a cult hit of sorts. But why is that issue so rare as opposed to like issue one?
Right. Issue one I saw there for that price as well. Issue one goes for a lot of money in really good condition. But this particular book is the first appearance of Aaron Slaughter.
Okay.
And it really brings into... you know, the council as well. This is the first appearance of the council and the first appearance of the dragon and all those supporting characters that are in the House of Slaughter.
So it's a pivotal issue in a series that still at that time had not really gained the popularity that it has now.
Exactly right. And I'm not sure what the actual print run was on issue number 5. I think that might come into it as well because they're really hard to find. Even on eBay, they're really hard to find, much less for a price that I'm willing to pay.
Well, it seems like we could probably do a whole episode just on the economics of sort of comic collecting and analyzing certain ebbs and flows and that sort of thing. But that is not our task today. Our task today is to do an episode of SPC Reissued. Now, before years and years ago, when we first started the show, And like, there's a part of me that wishes we could sustain that old format where we would go really, really deep each and every week on a full trade paperback, on a full long story arc. Sometimes we would do, I think the craziest thing I ever did was I recapped 24 issues of Savage Dragon in an over 2 hour podcast, which still is only like a few minutes per issue. So I still don't know how I did that one. We did this initial book of Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing, which takes us through the first arc of Alan Moore's run, where we sort of get a retelling of the of Swamp Thing's origin, and that really does play into this issue. So this is the first time we've revisited Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. Before we get into that, curious, what is some of your experience with Alan Moore's work, besides the fact that you haven't read the Swamp Thing, which is your homework assignment? But what stands out to you as some of your favorites of Alan Moore's work over the years?
You know, I'm gonna embarrass myself a little bit further.
Come on, have you read? How many have read Watchmen?
I've read Watchmen. Okay. Yeah,
so you're allowed to say Watchmen if you want.
It's a Watchmen, I guess. But I'm gonna embarrass myself. My knowledge of Alan Moore's work is really limited to what you guys have covered on the show.
That's
so,
okay.
You know, Watchmen. I have a bunch of homework to do. There's a lot of comics that, for some reason, and I don't know how I missed Alan Moore's work back when I was really reading. But something I need to go back and look at.
All right. Well, fair enough, Eric. And it's one of those things that it's like, it's not for everyone at first, but it also is for everyone at some point once you get yourself deep enough. And I'm not going to say more than that, but I do think that then the best place for you to start will be the beginning of this Swamp Thing run, because it's really up your alleyway with the horror and all that stuff. So I'm just going to give a quick recap of Swamp Thing's origin, which does tie directly into this issue, because in this issue, Swamp Thing is sort of mentally recovering from the revelations of the arc that we covered years ago. One of our very first, I want to say it's issue 8 or 7, or it's very early on in the run, and I'll try to link to that. But if you just go to secondprintcomics.substack.com, everything is archived over there. If you just type in Swamp Thing or Alan Moore, you will find that episode, or go back to your podcast feed. You're smart people. You can find this. But nonetheless, basically, the original origin of Swamp Thing was that Alec Holland is this scientist working on some regenerative plant, something or other in the swamp. These baddies come over, they kill him and his wife. They blow up his lab, and the chemicals infuse him into the swamp, and he turns into this swamp creature. That is essentially the original origin of Swamp Thing. However, Alan Moore came in and he said, "Ain't now I'm going to do the origin. I'm going to do it a little bit, something a little different. I'm going to go in there. Every time I try to do Alan Moore, it gets worse and worse, and it sounds less and less British. He's just trying to do a little Cockney, but that's not at all what Alan Moore sounds like. So my apologies to Mr. Moore and to all British people whatsoever. Now, Alan Moore came in and he said, I'm going to flip this thing on its head. I'm going to make this a little more interesting. So to sum up the new origin, which is still the old origin, the same thing happened. The baddies came over, but they didn't just blow up the lab and turn Alec Holland into Swamp Thing. They actually did kill Alec Holland. Alec Holland died. Alec Holland was a human who was killed, who never became Swamp Thing. What instead happened was that the chemicals that whatever fused with Alec Holland's like brain cells and his body and his mind, and that fused into the swamp, and that created this swamp creature. The swamp creature that believed he was Alec Holland transformed, because he had like the mind and the memories and all this stuff of Alec Holland imbued into himself via the green, which is a concept that will sort of become a larger part of the DC universe. But Swamp Thing is really an extension of the green, the power of the green, that has in its initial formation here basically been confused and thought it was this person, Alec Holland. But that's not really true in Alan Moore's version, Alec Holland actually is dead and was never Swamp Thing. And that leaves Swamp Thing here as we start this new issue, sort of, you know, he's just found this out. He's just had this revelation that he's not really Alec Holland. He's never really been a human. He is just Swamp Thing, only he has memories of Alec Holland. So now he is sort of dealing with that. He's also reunited with Abigail, who Abigail Arcane, who is the daughter of the major villain of Swamp Thing, who is Dr. Arcane. And they're kind of buddies. technically not lovers. Well, he's a swamp creature, first of all. But also, she is with this guy who I call Creepy Matt Cable. He is a very creepy guy, and he's not really creepy, but he's had some issues with possession and demons and this sort of thing. So things have been tough in their relationship. So she's kind of just Swamp Thing's bestie, I guess you could say, right now. But things will unfold. But nonetheless, we start this issue off. Swamp Thing, number 28, The Burial. And Swamp Thing is just digging. He's just digging in the swamp. It's raining. It's pouring. All you see is just more and more dirt and clumps of mud being flapped out as Swamp Thing is just alone digging and digging. And he's asking himself, how deep? How deep does it have to be? The soil, it's wet. The digging is difficult. And I have been digging for such a long time. And then Abigail is just there, just having a good old time. Hey, looks nice in autumn, doesn't it? She's not anywhere in this sort of deep malaise that Swamp Thing is in, as he's in some ways, you know, quite literally searching for his identity, digging through the swamp. In his mind, he's trying to almost find himself or find what he thought he was and find the actual body or actual remnants of Alec Holland. But she's kind of like not even aware of this or thinking about it. She's just having a good old time. And he's saying, you know, you're not looking too bad yourself. Isn't this funny what's happening to your skin? As has it happened before? And as we'll learn now, Swamp Thing, now that he's basically letting go of his human side, because that human side was never real. And he's becoming more in touch with nature. So he's now becoming more in touch with the seasons. So now his skin, the greenness of him is even changing as they go into the fall. And Abigail is, of course, noticing this. So they're just having a good old time sort of digging around. And Swamp Thing is really, he's becoming more in touch with himself. And now she points out this bird, the blue heron, flying through the swamp, and Swamp Thing's just kind of asking her, oh, how are you, by the way? Because they had just gone through this whole weird thing with the Floronic Man and this demon creature who the reader knows was kind of connected to Matt Cable, but we don't really know that yet. So Abigail went through this whole sort of mental episode in the prior thing. So now she's saying, oh, you noticed the change. Well, you know, I really had to apologize. You know, I know I was acting a little crazy the last couple of weeks. That's what she's referring to there. The Swamp Thing is kind of following up. He's like, well, what about Creepy Matt? He doesn't call him Creepy Matt. I'll call him Creepy Matt. And she's saying, you know, things are just fine. You know, he's out looking for a house. He's got a new job. And he's like, well, a house? How is that possible? Like, you don't have a job. You don't have money. But anyway, she's just kind of brushing this all aside, saying, oh, you know, after the incident with that demon creature, I thought it would all be, well, I don't know what I thought, but it was just amazing. They just explained away everything as mass hysteria and everything's fine. So she still has her job at this sort of insane asylum and whatnot. So she comes up to ask, you know, have you noticed how long it's taken for the flies to die off this year? Now, this doesn't really play into this particular issue, but it does play into kind of the larger arc that plays out from here that does involve what's going on with her husband, Creepy Matt Cable. But as she's saying this, Swamp Thing gets distracted because he sees something that shocks him. He sees an apparition of sorts. When I first saw this, I actually thought this was Dream, the way they kind of like, the way his hair is shaped and the way the apparition is shaped. But then I realized that that's not what's happening. And she's just kind of still going off talking about flies, and Swamp Thing is freaking out. And she's like, Alec, you know, what's going on? Did you see something? And he says, this is when he first flips out in here. Because she's still been calling him Alec the whole time, even though she knows the new updated Alan Moore origin and whatnot. And he snaps at her and he just screams, don't keep calling me Alec. And she's just, I'm so sorry. She's kind of apologetic. And he's saying, look, I am not Alec Holland. Alec Holland is dead. And Swamp Thing just wanders off into the swamp and goes back to digging, as the caption tells us, dead but not buried. So it seems like Swamp Thing wants to have a burial for the person he never was. I'm curious, Eric, coming into this cold, having no knowledge of this run or knowledge of Swamp Thing, what did you just think sort of the vibe and feel of this issue as we are just kind of thrown into Swamp Thing in a very sort of morose place, digging through the rain, digging through the mud?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was pretty good, you know, first issue to kind of pick up on, right? I knew kind of what was going on after a couple of pages. You know, when I saw the ghost, I wasn't sure who that was initially until a couple of pages later, which we haven't gotten to yet. But I thought that the storytelling complements the art very well. You know, the expression on Swamp Thing's face is very telling. You get a lot of feeling out of the art as well. So, you know, I was pretty excited reading through this issue number 28 here. That was pretty good.
Yeah, and Stephen Bissette is really, to me, he's like the seminal Swamp Thing artist, because I never give credit to the colors, but you'll see later on, they really do a lot with the colors here, and like what Abby is mentioning about the green, if you actually go back and look even a number of issues earlier, his green color here is much brighter and much more vibrant than the green in the previous arc. So it's something they mentioned, but it's something that really is, it does actually hold up in the artwork if you kind of go back and check. So anyway, he's kind of flipped out, because that apparition that he saw was indeed Alec Holland. So now he's kind of chasing himself, or what he thought was himself, through the swamp, and he's pissed now. He's just had enough of this shit. He's screaming, "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" Just ripping his way through the swamp. And you know, one thing I like about this issue is, like, this might not hit as much for you because you haven't really done a lot of deep dives on Alan Moore's work, but this couldn't be more of an Alan Moore issue. I mean, this is why I wanted to review this issue as my next foray into Swamp Thing, because, look, spoiler alert, not a whole lot actually occurs in this issue. But this is like, it's a very Alan Moore type character analysis. Alan Moore likes to take a character and have them in some ways become the most broken down, I don't want to say pathetic, but in some ways maybe pathetic version of themselves. He essentially will send characters on an existential crisis of their own, and he has no problem spending a whole issue doing that, spending a whole issue analyzing this, doing sort of a psychoanalysis on a character, having a character completely break himself down, lose who they are, and rediscover who they are. And, you know, on the surface, you could definitely just like look at this issue and say literally nothing happened in this issue, which is definitely different than a lot of the issues that, you know, that come before this and surround this, where there's a lot more, I guess, plot movement, you could say. But to me, where this lacks in plot movement, it completely makes up for in character development, because what we see unfold here is really really over this, and we'll talk a little bit about the next issue as well. What we see unfold here is a pivotal turn in. I'll say Swamp Thing. I won't call him Alec. I don't want him to get angry in Swamp Thing's life here. So he's still rampaging through the swamp. He's screaming, "You're not Alec Holland. I'm not Holland. Holland died. Holland is dead. He died in an explosion. I have his consciousness, his memories, but he is dead." So he's still grappling with this because, like I've said, the consciousness was infused with him. So even though he knows he's not Alec Holland, it's as far as he can tell, it's almost like when you're watching a movie, you know, like when you're invested in a movie, you start and let's say a horror movie or something, you will jump when there's a jump scene, a scare scene, because you forget that you're not the star of the movie. You forget you're not actually living in this movie. Your body forgets. You get immersed in it. And I got to imagine it's 1,000 times crazier for Swamp Thing. So maybe he might logically know, just like I logically know I'm not living in the movie that's scaring me in the moment. Swamp Thing logically knows he's not Alec Holland, but good luck actually convincing yourself of that when you have all his memories, you remember his whole life, you remember all these incidents, and you, as far as you've ever experienced, you've been Alec Holland. So that's exactly the crisis that Swamp Thing is going through right now. So he's screaming, but he is dead. I will not be haunted by myself. And he turns around and sees this apparition again, and he follows the apparition. He does kind of look like Dream here, just the sort of faceless expression here. And again, Swamp Thing, very shocked. He almost looks sad for a minute because, you know, the apparition almost looks sad when Swamp Thing says, "I'm not going to be haunted by myself." And then the apparition goes to walk away when Swamp Thing goes, "Well, wait, no, don't leave." You know, it's like it's a rough relationship that Swamp Thing's got here with the apparition. He wants him to go one minute. He doesn't want him to leave the next minute. I think we've all been there. And he pleads with him, "Please, please," as the apparition walks on water, by the way, little Jesus shout out there, walks on water through the swamp as Swamp Thing just yells at him, "Please come back," but he didn't come back. So Swamp Thing says, "So I just had to follow him and follow him." So Swamp Thing is now continuing to just run through the swamp, as he even says in his dialogue, through the luminous dusk. And I say again to the art here, a lot of this has to go to the coloring. He is running through a luminous dusk. Like, they don't just use this terminology. I mean, the artwork really does match the sort of the vibe that you see change and the atmosphere that you see change. Through pools of cold water, he follows him there, where? To the cabin. And this is This is where it all went down. Now, how is this possible? Well, you know, because we're in Alan Moore existential world. I thought the cabin was blew up. It did. But bear with us, all right? Because we're going deep here. We're going deep into the psyche of Swamp Thing himself. We're not just in the swamp. We're not just in a physical swamp. We're in the swamp that is the psyche of the Swamp Thing. So Swamp Thing enters this cabin that obviously at this point we are really more in the mind of the Swamp Thing. He goes into the cabin where it all began. Still standing, but barely. Naked rooms, filthy with wet ash. Now, this is where, like, when you do become... Now, this is... Remzo and I often also joke, like, all right, reading Alan Moore is not just reading pretty picture books, you know? It's not reading a Rob Liefeld book where you're just there for the pretty pictures. Reading Alan Moore, it's like reading a book that has pictures as well. Same with Neil Gaiman. That's not either a good thing or a bad thing, because I like reading regular books as well. But it depends. It's the kind of thing where you got to be in the right mood, because sometimes you pick up a comic because you just want to turn your brain off. You know what I mean? You just want to look at some cool artwork and see people punch each other and like move on with your day. I would not recommend reading an Alan Moore book, especially not Alan Moore Swamp Thing, if that's the mood that you're in. But if you're in the mood for some weird shit, if you're in the mood for a deep character analysis, if you're in the mood to read a book, essentially, but get to see some pictures, that's when I would recommend diving into some Alan Moore. So he's very descriptive with his writing. And to me, the best Alan Moore works are when he's so in sync with the artist and his sort of existential narrative descriptions go well with not just what you're seeing in the art, but the style of the art. And that's why I love this run so much, because Stephen Bissett, his art just feels completely in sync with Alan Moore's vibe and with his narration. But he's picking up these pieces of upholstery. That's why I like to occasionally just read some of this, because it's just describing what happens. Again, nothing, hardly anything happens in this issue, but there's a lot that happens.
You say there's not a lot that happens, but the depth of character development that happens here and the kind of exposition on his background and what actually happened and how he's coming to terms with it.
Like exactly.
That's pretty big for the character. So I think I'd say there's a lot that happens here,
right,
from a plot standpoint, and, you know, maybe not from an action standpoint. No, but from character development, a huge amount happens here.
Yeah, I mean, if you're invested in this character, you could actually say there's more character development in this issue than the entire six or seven issues preceding it, even though there was a lot more action in those issues. Those issues where he's actually battling the Floronic Man. We even see the Justice League come in because Floronic Man takes over a whole town, which I do like that they're like, even like in these kind of weirder books, like Alan Moore, Swamp Thing, Neil Gaiman, Sandman. Neil Gaiman's Sandman, eventually they sort of broke off into its own universe and didn't really cross over much. It kind of Vertigo became its own thing. But in their initial version, like, Sandman would, like, interact with the Justice League, like the Neil Gaiman Sandman. It would just be like, and it's weird going back to that stuff because they don't even feel like they live in the same world now. But they do, and they did then. And it's kind of fun to see these sort of weirder characters interact with, like, normal superheroes, like Superman and Batman. But yeah, I mean, there's more... You could say more happens to the character of Swamp Thing in this issue than any of those previous issues. There's just not as much, you know, there's not as much action, so to speak. But yeah, you could definitely argue that there is more that happens in this issue than any other issue. So it all depends on our definition of happening.
Right. I suppose.
The happening. Well, yeah. So now he hears some voices in the cabin. He hears some people talking, and he moves over and goes and looks in the bedroom, where he does, of course, see Alec Holland and his lady. I forget her name. I had it in my notes.
Laura.
Laura. See? My new Swamp Thing expert is already fully invested in this.
Green shirt.
Holland and his wife, Laura, getting ready for bed as Swamp Thing, who is not... Now, this, in context, this is actually kind of creepy because he's not Alec Holland. So this is kind of weird that he's seeing a, you know, into the bedroom of Alec Holland and his wife. But, you know, fair enough. He already has all his memories. So, you know, he already remembers this stuff. So I guess nothing new under the sun for him. So he's peeking in and watching what are clearly we're, I don't know if we're supposed to think these are actually apparitions. I think we're really supposed to be at this point. The swamp is in Swamp Thing's mind because we know the cabin doesn't exist anymore. The cabin's been blown up. So this is really Swamp Thing trying to find the inner Alec Holland in himself and to sort of exercise that inner Alec Holland and let that go. in a sense. So she's getting, you know, Laura's getting ready for bed, and you know, Alex being really flirty, saying, you know, you're going to look really good when you get old. And she's like, this is kind of creepy. He says, when I was 17, I remember you saying, you know, you're going to look really good when you're 25. Now, in fairness, I don't know how old Alec was at this time. Maybe they were, you know, teen lovers and he was 17 as well. So that would be fine. I just hope he wasn't too much older when he said that. But again, now this is the 80s. I don't think we were too worried about it back then. about young scientists dating 17-year-olds. I think it was totally fine at the time. And he says, he tries to play it down. He's like, no, I meant your bone structure. You're going to be beautiful for a long while. And he's like, and she says, well, I'd rather you wore me out before I was 30. You couldn't really be rich for a long while instead. But really what we're just getting into is a glimpse in the sort of regular human life of Alec Holland, you know, with his lady here, who at one point was 17. And he's just, they're laughing it up, having a good old time. And he suddenly says, are you cold? And she says, no, are you reading? No, I don't know. I don't know why she says, are you reading? Does he get cold when he reads? I'm not sure. But at the same time, Swamp Thing is continuing to sort of just walk around.
I think she's got that being worn out on her mind.
Oh, I see what it is. Oh,
right, look at the look. Look at the look.
Yeah. You're right. And she's saying, oh, yeah, the look. She's saying, I get it now. He's saying, he's not realizing that he's like being the dumb guy. She's like, oh, I want to warm you up. You want to get warmed up? And she's like, what are you cold or something? He's like, what are you reading a book? Come on. He's really not getting it. So, and I guess Swamp Thing doesn't want to stay for this part. So he has a little bit of decency here, even though he still has all the memories. So he just continues to walk around this cabin. And he says, this is where the heart is. This is where we live, where Linda and I lived, in this fucking cabin in the swamp, and where we died. And now he hears some other voices from another part of the cabin. But Dr. Holland, we came to you in good faith. Save it for the boys in blue, Ferret. My wife and I will sleep a lot better knowing you three are behind bars. And I don't know. So Alec Holland is like fending these guys off, these guys that have come to fuck with him. And they're saying, sorry, we can't accommodate you, Doc. Bruno. And this guy just decks out. Now he's got a shotgun. Now if I was Alec Holland and I got a shotgun and these two guys are at my door, like, I'm not letting this guy get a lick in on me. Alec was using pretty poor defense, to be honest here. Not that this is a home self-defense podcast necessarily, but if you're going to defend your home with a shotgun, you do not walk up and stand within arm's reach of your potential assailant. So that is my shotgun self-defense tip of the day. You remain in proper distance to keep yourself in a range. And the nice thing about the shotgun, you can blow a big hole through somebody. You don't need to be that accurate with a shotgun, so you can stand a little bit back. I can't even tell. That actually might be a rifle. I thought it was a shotgun at first. Either way, very poor gun defense for Alec Holland here, which does result. I think this is what Swamp Thing is thinking when he sees him get decked. He's like, no, this is terrible gun defense. You should have taken that NRA course. And he just gets knocked out. And so these guys take the guns and they take out Alec's wife and they leave a little surprise package in the form of dynamite. Now Swamp Thing is yelling, stop, no, please, no. But as he tries to grab these guys, he realizes, well, shit, I'm an apparition here. Like, I can't touch anything. So he can't actually affect anything that's happening here. He's not actually there in a sense. He's really just, it's almost like he's watching a TV show, but he's physically present, I guess, as this is happening. And he's saying, Holland, you've got to wake up. You must wake up. Wake up and it will all turn out differently. Holland, please. Now, when he's doing this, he's while he's living these memories and experiencing these memories, he's at the same time calling him Holland and talking to him as a separate person, because he is. But I, the way he's saying it is interesting, because he's saying, you know, wake up and it'll all turn out differently. It can all be different. And he's really trying in his mind here, if he could actually change the course of events, which we know he can't actually do, he's trying to save the life of Alec Holland so Alec Holland can go and live. But actually, if he saves the life of Alec Holland, if Alec Holland really did live, if this never continued, Swamp Thing would never exist, because Swamp Thing never was Alec Holland. He was just a result of the explosion. So if the explosion never happens, there's never a Swamp Thing. This creature is not it's not a continuation of Alec Holland. This is an entirely different creature that is essentially calling for his own lack of existence by trying to end the creation of Swamp Thing and the death of Alec Holland at the same time. Does that make sense? This is the part where you comment while I drink some Fox's.
Oh, it sure does.
But what were you thinking at this point in the issue, especially being someone who's really only diving into this for the first time? Was it resonating you, the identity crisis that Swamp Thing was going
through? Absolutely. Everything was coming together to me now. I mean, I had a little bit of experience with Swamp Thing because I used to watch the Swamp Thing show.
Oh, my God. That's
aired on USA Network.
I did as well. I don't think Alan Moore would approve of the Swamp Thing show. I'm just going to go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely not. The depth of storytelling in this run here is so much better, obviously. But yeah, this kind of brought it all together for me and really gave me a condensed background on the character Alex Holland, what they went through, and then Swamp Thing and what he's dealing with. I thought this was really great.
Yeah, so as Swamp Thing is yelling at Alex Holland here, Alec begins to come to. And he actually gets up and he's like, oh, man, it feels like they dropped a mountain on my head. He sees my playlist. His playmates decided to skip out. And this is still, you know, this is still Alec just or Swamp Thing just reliving this or not reliving it. I guess living it for the first time since he never actually lived it the first time. And Alec says, oh, my dear God, he sees the dynamite that is strapped under the table. I'm not really sure what these guys' deal was, why they I'm sure it is explained in the actual, you know, origin issues if you actually read the original story, but I don't know why they wanted to blow the place up, why they wouldn't just, because I think they wanted to steal the technology or steal the chemicals or something like that, so I don't know why they would also want to blow them up and kill Alec Holland, but you know, whatever, we're not concerned about that today.
They're bad guys,
that's right. I forgot, this is the 80s and it's comics and we need no other reason than because they're bad guys,
right.
He said, and he's going to try to defuse it as he's reaching for it. Boom, explosion. And this is interesting because it's to Swamp Thing, he's seeing this, but also reliving it because he has the memories of Alec Holland. And we see Alec Holland, who's on fire, doused in these chemicals. He actually runs and dives into the swamp, and you see his hand and his body just fade away into the swamp. But this gives Swamp Thing the knowledge there. He knows where it is. He knows where the body is supposed to be, or in theory, he knows that the body's in the swamp. So he says, okay, well, but where is the body? So then for hours, I sat there and watched and waited and nothing. Like, he's just waiting for something to happen. Almost nothing. And then we see a hand emerge. So we're still living through, we're reliving through the events. So hours later, and I guess Swamp Thing sits there in real time and sits through the hours of the reliving of this event, we see the hand of Swamp Thing emerge. And you can see even now the difference in colors. This is like the original Swamp Thing colors. It's more of like a yellowish green, where his current fall look, I guess you could say, the fall fashion look of Swamp Thing is the sort of the darker, sharper green. And Swamp Thing emerges from the swamp. Slowly but surely, zombie-like. And now we have this. You know what this reminds me of? You'll know this one. This reminds me of Undertaker versus Undertaker at SummerSlam. I think it was SummerSlam 94. One of the worst wrestling storylines and matches of all time, when the fake Undertaker fought the real Undertaker. This matchup, I think, is better. I think this is, even though not a ton more happens here than in that match, I like Swamp Thing v. Swamp Thing a lot better than Undertaker v. Undertaker. He goes to like shake his hand. Nothing. They're still just apparitions. So he's like, okay. He's like, okay, but wait, you can see me? You can hear me? Because they try to reach each other. So he's like, okay, this is progress. And the new Swamp Thing, which I guess is the old Swamp Thing, just kind of puts a finger over his mouth. And it says, like, shut the fuck up for a second. He says, but I got so much to tell you. Your future, the things you must know. He's like, you're not even fucking Alec Holland. You don't. And the Swamp Thing just gives them the shush. We've all gotten the shush at some point in our lives. From mom, from a significant other. We've all gotten the shush. And old Swamp Thing just points into the swamp. Swamp Thing says, the mud, something under the mud, what? And he just keeps, old Swamp Thing just keeps pointing towards the mud. And as he keeps pointing, he fades away and becomes an apparition. And now I think this is the moment where Swamp Thing is sort of back, in a sense. He's sort of back in our real world. He points at this grave, this empty grave, and he's like, well, cool. I just dug an empty grave for a vanished body. So now Swamp Thing says, but that is what you're trying to tell me, isn't it? The body didn't vanish. The mind, it was the mind that vanished. It vanished into the greenery. The mind was absorbed into the spoiled flesh, which created a new organism. So now he's gone into the swamp, and he is sort of, in his own mind, reliving the creation of himself. So it is the death of Alec Holland, but it's the birth of Swamp Thing. It's not a transformation of Alec Holland into Swamp Thing. It's a creation of an all new creature. So now we're kind of seeing that for the first time in a sense. The mind vanishes completely and the flesh vanishes, but the bones remain. And now real life, now Swamp Thing is now at the bottom of the swamp, and he finds the non-decayed bones, the skeleton of Alec Holland. This is sort of a moment where now you can accept it. Like, all this stuff he learned from the Florotic Man about his real origin, about the fact that he's not really Alec Holland. He could probably still, in a sense, tell himself, well, maybe I really am Alec Holland. Maybe that was some bullshit. Now this is the moment. He picks up the actual body. This is not Alec Holland's body transformed into Swamp Thing. That body is gone. All that's left are these bones that Swamp Thing is now carrying out of the swamp in a very horror vibe, as this swamp creature carries this skeleton all the way out of the swamp and just drags this thing all the way over to the grave, the grave that he had been digging for a body that he didn't even know existed. And he very nicely puts the skeleton of Alec Holland in this grave, starts tossing all this mud on it, and a very cool shot here, it feels very movie-esque, though, the way that this artist laid out of the full moon as Alec is putting the finishing, I don't want him to get mad at me, as Swamp Thing is finishing this burial, and he says, there, but there's no marker. So then he goes to his arm, and he rips a little sort of branch off his arm, and sticks it in the ground, and thus marks the grave of Alec Holland. He's there. He knows he's there. And then as Swamp Thing walks away, he says, I know he's there. I know that he is smiling, but I don't look back, because this does signify that Swamp Thing has finally really processed, embraced, and accepted who he is and what he is. And what he is a brand new creature that was formed from this event that happened. Of course, his story is tied into Alec Holland, but he is not Alec Holland. Alec Holland has been buried, has been put away, as Swamp Thing walks off into the I don't know if that's the setting sun or the moon or whatever it is. He's walking off into it, that's for sure. And that ends what is a very, again, like I said, a very Alan Moore-esque issue. So, Eric, as someone who has not had a lot of Alan Moore in his life, do you think of this? What are your first impressions of this issue, as someone who hadn't done much Swamp Thing either?
I thought this was a fantastic issue. The amount of storytelling that went into the few pages that are in this issue was amazing. The amount of feeling that went into it and that you could take out of it, I thought was great. The ending, just summed everything up nice and neat little package. And it just makes me want to read more of this run, just because of how well it's written and how well it's drawn.
Absolutely. And that is indeed your homework, is to go back and read this entire run. And then maybe we can do a retrospective on the whole thing. As I think, if I was going to recommend one Alan Moore work to somebody, I don't know if this would be the one I would recommend. It might depend on the person. For you, it's this, because you're already into this type of stuff, into sort of that horror vibe. So for you, this would absolutely be my place to start. For a lot of people, I might say Watchmen, or I might say Killing Joke, or something like that. Something more Batman or Superman or something like that. But I think for you, this is the place to do it. So, and because you said you wanted to keep reading, you did actually read, I think, a bit of 2029. So I'm not going to go into the plot of episode 29. There's just one portion of episode. I did it. Issue's episode. Issue. It's been a while. I'm not going to go into the full plot of issue 29. There's just one scene that I want to skip forward to that does kind of sum up a little bit of things that went on here. And, Swamp Thing is approaching Abby again. He's saying, oh, Abby, hi, it's been a long time. I missed you. And she says, oh, well, I thought after the last time, I thought you didn't like me anymore. And she's like, no, I know I made you mad. I kept calling you Alec. I know you're not Alec, but, I can't get used to calling you anything else, because I always called you Alec, and I'm sorry, I'm a moron. And he just says, Abby, it doesn't matter. Not anymore. You can call me Alec, if that's easier. So I thought, he says, like, I can? And she's so excited. And I thought this was like, and they give each other a nice little look here. And the art here, like, man, Stephen Bissett's art, like, the fact that he can convey emotion on the swampy, leafy face of Swamp Thing is incredibly impressive. And he does that throughout this run, but really with this panel, with the two of them looking at each other and having this moment like, okay, we're cool now. And you can tell he's moved on. He is not the morose swamp motherfucker he was an issue ago. He's happy. He's feeling joy. And it's something we hadn't seen from Swamp Thing in this entire run. So it is kind of like a nice moment. And it shows that he is really moved on. He's moved on so much that not only as in last issue did he move on from the Alec Holland thing, he embraced that he was not Alec Holland, buried the body of Alec Holland, left him there, no looking back, but he's so moved on that he's even okay to be called Alec because he's not going to be triggered by it anymore. He gets it, you know? He's like, she's called me Alec. She's only known me as Alec. She interacted with me when she thought I was Alec, when I called myself Alec. So I can't expect the world to change for me. Just like I've got to do this myself. This is not on the world to change around me. You know, if someone calling me Alec bothers me, then that's my problem is the way I take this. And he has gotten over that. So to me, this was like a nice little bow tie on the events of the last issue. It shows that he has really moved on. He's moved on so much that he's back to okay being called Alec, which does now, I don't know where this now falls in canon, if it's considered canon. Because when you see Swamp Thing appear in DC Comics now, everyone calls him Alec. So I guess you can headcanon this either way. You can headcanon this out of existence and he's always been Alec Holland. Or you can just headcanon that, yeah, he knows he's not Alec Holland, but everyone's always called him that, so he just doesn't correct people, and then that still continues his origin. That's the way I like to do it, because in my version of DC Comics, this is the accepted Alec Holland origin. This is the accepted Swamp Thing origin story, and always will be. There is no Alec Swamp Thing is not Alec Holland. That will always be my origin story, but I can accept it, and I cannot cringe when I see characters call him that because he's let it go, and he let it go in this issue.
It's also easier to call him Alec.
And it's just easier, right? That's the main point. It's easier to say Alec than have every single interaction with him be go, well, actually, I'm not really Alec Holland. I'm actually his career. And then getting, it would be too much to explain.
So there's
that too. So that being said, I think it's time to go to our grades on this. Now, I think this was one of the higher graded runs when we first looked at the first sort of retelling of the origin. So I don't want to influence you, Eric. As a first timer on this one, I want to get your pure thoughts on this, writing and art. Let's see.
Yeah,
let's
sure. So I'm going to start with the art. So I really like the art. I thought it was very appropriate for the story. I thought it conveyed a lot of feeling. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give the art on this a 4. On the story side, I really enjoyed the story. Storytelling was fantastic in issue number 28. I didn't get through 29, but I will. So I'm going to give the story a 4.5. It really conveyed a lot of feeling. It conveyed a lot of backstory, a lot of character building in it, just one issue. So I'm going with a 4.5 on that. So that gives me an 8.5.
All right. Not too shabby. And let me see. This is an issue that I really like and I really enjoy as like a really character analysis. It really does tie up the emotion and the psyche of Swamp Thing kind of coming off the events of the last arc while also setting him up for what's about to happen, because what's about to come in this next arc is going to be a really challenging time for him, and things are about to get really crazy. So this is like a really interesting sort of like key inflection point within the series. So that's why I thought it was a really good issue to just pull out and just to look at on its own. But I can't say this is like one of the greatest comic issues of all time or anything like that. It's just really good. It's a really good character analysis, and it's the kind of issue you can't do this every issue. Look, if every issue was a psychoanalysis of this, of Swamp Thing looking at, whatever, I would probably get bored pretty quick. But when it's an issue like this around two larger storylines, I think it's kind of like the perfect little reset button. And in some ways, it's kind of like a good jumping on point, maybe. And because, it's enough to not overwhelm you. You do get the origin story of the character here. So it's actually probably a pretty good first issue to jump on, because you get the origin story, you get to learn about the character, you get the vibe and feel of the book, but you're not overwhelmed by all the surrounding storyline. It's enough to interest you in it without having to like have read a thousand other books. I think, and that's one of Remzo's judging points. Is it good for a new reader? I'd say it's a very good for a new reader. It's a very good issue. So I'm gonna give the writing a 4. I'm gonna agree with you on that. It's a 4. It's very, very good. We're not going into 4.5 or 5 territory, all-time elite status here, but it's very good. And I'm gonna go You know what? I'm going to agree with you fully. I think the artist Stephen Bissette fits perfectly with this story, with Alan Moore's style. 5 is a little too high. We're talking perfect, but really, really good. 4.5. I'm going to agree with you on the art. So I'm gonna match your score completely here. I'm going to give this issue an 8.5. That gives us, because you are Remzo today, that gives us an SPC total of, quick math tells me, 17. That's very high. I would say that's very high. I would say that's even just above Remzo's vaunted Sunday read, you may as well kick the tires on it, status. I called a little higher. I would actually say if you enjoy Alan Moore, and especially if you enjoy Alan Moore's Swamp Thing and you haven't read this issue, I would actually call this a pivotal issue to read.
Yeah, I'd say this. I agree with that. I'd say this is a fantastic issue. This is a great comic book to read.
All right. Well, that being said, can I expect that you will go back and are you going to start on this homework assignment now that I've teased you? Now that you have access through me to this?
No, I mysteriously have access to it. Yes, I will. Definitely going to complete this run. So far it's off to a good start.
All right. Well, very, very well then. Eric, thank you so much for coming on, for subbing in for Remzo at the last minute, because here at SBC, we always get it done. All right. We always show up. It doesn't matter if one of us is having an existential crisis. It doesn't matter if one of us is doing Florida man things. We always find a way to show up each and every Wednesday. That is our pledge to you. If you want to make a pledge to us, and by that we mean money, you can head over to patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can contribute to the Remzo Healing and Reading Fund at the same time. Also, as Remzo has mentioned, we are doing a summer special. Anybody who signs up for our Patreon is also going to get a special signed SBC poster delivered right to you. And Remzo will donate, I believe, $1 per sign up to the Gary Sinise Fund. That is his favorite charity. So look, good stuff all around here. Check it all out. Patreon.com/secondprintpod. We do all sorts of bonus content, early release episodes, and a lot more to come. Eric, thanks again for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Until next time, everybody, don't forget to continue to read comics and what now? And change the world. Good night, America.